listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Right now, you can lease a 2017 Blue Cruise from only $138 bi-weekly at Lakewood Chev. Ryan Rashog joins us now. Stronger, the Edmonton Oilers, huge. Well, what a weekend, man. Talk about a roller coaster of emotion for Oilers fans. They were losing their marbles on Friday night, and then they were celebrating like they won the lottery on Sunday with one of the more convincing victories of the season for the Blue and Orange.
Yeah, it was pretty resounding, wasn't it? That first period was unreal. I mean, they just absolutely put the boots to them, and it was impressive.
I guess when you're looking at this whole game, were you surprised? Or not, about the push they had to start the game after really a deflating end to the previous nights or two nights earlier?
You know, I think maybe the surprising thing for me was that they had two of their top four defensemen out of the lineup. Can you guys hear me okay, by the way?
Pardon? Yeah. No, I'm joking. Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting some bad feedback back into my own ear. But when you find out that you're going to be without two of your top four defensemen before the start of the game, that could have spelled significant disaster for the Oilers, but they jumped on Anaheim so quickly that it kind of didn't really matter because they were playing with the lead the whole game. But in Game 7, now we think Klotbaum will probably be back for Game 7, but Sekera is a big loss for them. So it definitely it surprised me that that didn't affect them more in the early going of that game, that they were able to hold. And really, they came across a goalie that wasn't ready to go and had a really tough night, and they took advantage of it.
Yeah, I thought Matt Benning filled in admirably last night for the Oilers, and I like the right shot option on the power play. I assume he'll be on the second unit in place of Sekera next game, with Klefbom sliding back in on the number one unit, played almost 24 minutes. And for a rookie in the biggest game of the season, you know, that's got to be a monumental boost of confidence for him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's almost like since he got thumped in Game 5 and left the game, he came back, and not that he was a different player, because he's been a good player for a long time, but it almost seems to have, like, just, I don't know, getting his bell rung seemed to wake him up or get him playing a little bit more on instinct or something. It seemed to take his game to a different level, and he's been fantastic since he came back. I mean, he was 23-plus minutes, played on the second pairing, or essentially the first pairing in that last game. And he's just kind of, he's playing loose. He's found another level. And it's impressive, because the pressure went up for him last game as his responsibility went up. And he was one of the best defensemen in that game. We're watching this guy develop in the most critical moments, the most pressure-packed moments, and his game is getting better and better. So, I don't know, it's almost like he got hit and didn't remember who he was, and someone said, tell him he's Duncan Keith, and sent him out there.
Huh. Yeah, there's no doubt. He played just a great game. It was a treat watching him. And just, you're right, his development is right in front of us. You know, it seems like it's changed a little bit, what the way specifically Milan Lucic is speaking. You know, he's now talking about there aren't always opportunities to advance to the third round or then be five wins away from the Stanley Cup final. Do you fall into that grouping, or are you thinking this is just a good learning curve for the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, I don't think players can take where they're at for granted, and especially for some of these young guys, right? Some guys experience success early in their career, and then they just think it's automatic, going to be automatic every year. And just ask the Washington Capitals, and you can have a good team, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get where you want to go every year. So, I mean, I think they understand that. I think they're going to be a playoff team, you guys, most years moving forward. But just getting in doesn't necessarily guarantee anything. And so these are lessons these guys are learning. That, I mean, man, going back to the San Jose series and that 7-0 game and the lessons they learned coming out of that. You win two games on the road in this series and then spit the bit in both games at home. You lose three in a row. I mean, there's just been so many scenarios that they've been faced with. And they haven't passed with flying colors with all of them. I mean, they've made mistakes. They've been bad at times. But they're picking up these lessons along the way. And I mean, getting through to the third round of the playoffs this year, potentially, what an accomplishment for a team. I mean, I think if you poured a bunch of truth serum into the head coach and the general manager and said you'd take the Ducks to Game 7 in round 2, they would be absolutely out of their minds thrilled with that.
Yeah, well, I think it's the players themselves never had the low expectations, right? So I don't think they themselves will look and say, oh, okay, we're just happy to be here. They would say, okay, you know what? Good accomplishment. But I agree with Struds and Lucic that and Washington and St. Louis and San Jose, we can go down the list of Pittsburgh Penguins went 7 years between cup appearances. Like, there's never any guarantee because sometimes you can be the better team. And maybe you run into a hot goalie. Maybe you have bad luck. Maybe you have a bad injury at the worst time, like the Penguins this year with Chris Letang. Like, how much better would they be if he was there? So I think the Oilers will go into that game against Anaheim on Wednesday, fired up. And you look at the keys to that game, Ryan. Drysdale's obviously been unbelievable in this series. Connor McDavid, funny enough, he scored 3 goals in 3 straight games. The Oilers lost all 3. It's kind of a weird stat, but in the 3 games they've won, he has 1 point. And 3 games they've lost, he's produced goals. So it's kind of strange. But the trio that right now, which has just been invisible offensively and is not getting any hard matchups the last 2 games and still haven't been able to do anything, at some point, you know, if 93, 14, and 67 could at least make an appearance in the series, Game 7 would definitely be the best time to do it.
Well, for sure. But, I mean, listen, guys, we have been talking about contributions from Nugent Hopkins and Eberle and where are they since the start of the playoffs. We've been talking about that the entire stretch here. So I don't know why suddenly 2 series in, it's going to magically come. I guess they're due and they're getting some looks. But I guess the one thing that they've shown is they don't need those guys. They don't need them to score. They don't need them to produce offensively. They need them to try not to be liabilities and to play some good minutes against the other team's second or third line. But between Letestu and McDavid and Draisaitl and the defense pitching in here and there, the Oilers actually have enough offense with those without those guys contributing. Now, it's been a lot harder than maybe it would have been had they produced like a $6 million salary suggests they should. But they have been able to get results without those guys producing so far.
We're looking on the other side, the Ducks. I mean, they've got a couple of days to mullet that last one over. And I thought some interesting comment from from Randy Carlyle after the game saying, you know, I wasn't there talking about the Game 7 series losses have happened in the past for some of the members of this team. Is he distancing himself from that just to make sure he's okay? Or is it to tell distancing the team away from that those 2 breakdowns we've seen past?
Yeah, we beat that around a little bit today on SportsCenter and That's Hockey with Craig Button and Frank Cervalli, and I didn't like the comment from Carlyle. Now, he was joking, and it's like sort of joking. He laughed afterwards, but his quote was, don't pin any of those Game 7s on me. Well, why would you say that even? It's almost like he doesn't really care what the players in the room think. Because, Shreds, you tell me, if I were a player in that room, I'd be going, it's not a huge deal, but I'd kind of be going, man, thanks, Randy. Like, yep, okay, when we lose, it's 5 for us and just 1 for you. Yeah, we're all clear on that one. Like, it almost seems like he was distancing himself from it. And I don't know why you would do or say anything to distance yourself from the rest of your team in that moment. And then you look at Todd McClellan's comments today, and Todd McClellan is talking about, you know, 11 years out of the playoffs and using the word we as an organization, lumping himself in as we with the Oilers when he wasn't around for any of that. I can't picture those words ever coming out of Todd McClellan's mouth, what Randy Carlyle said. Joking or not, I felt like it put some distance between him and the rest of his team. And my eyebrow would be raised if I were a Duck player and heard that. But Randy's old school, and I don't think he cares if the players raise an eyebrow at something he says.
Well, he did go on right afterwards to say, hey, guys, like, tell me the names of who you think it matters. I don't think it matters to this group and everything. I didn't take it the same way that it was Randy Carlyle say, hey, wait, it wasn't me. Sure, he said that, but basically he was
like Trump. We don't take him literally.
Well, no, because he said it as a joke right away. He's like, hey, All he wanted to say was there's no point asking me about it because I wasn't there. And even asking the other guys, he says this is a different group. But because I think even last year's group, there's still 8 or 9 guys that aren't there. But what's interesting is Getzlaff and Perry have lost the last 5 Game 7s. You know, other guys, Cogliano, 0-4 for Fowler. Like, you got to go down that list to find anybody who plays that's actually won a Game 7.
Well, that's just it. And these are – their core has spit the bit 4 years in a row, right? Had the lead, lost Game 6, lose Game 7. You look at Getzlaff numbers in those – 9 games, and it's not good. It's not good. So it's very relevant. Like, normally when people say, oh, it's the Oilers are 7-11 in their last 18 game sevens. You just kind of go, well, whatever. That's through two generations of teams. It's totally irrelevant. And it doesn't matter. I don't like those kind of stats. This is a very relevant stat. This is their core group of players. Perry, Getzlaff, Cogliano, Fowler, guys that are extremely important to this team that were all together through these losses. So it's very relevant, and it will be weighing on their minds, I'm sure. And if the Oilers get the first goal in that game, or if Gibson lets in a soft one, don't think they won't be squeezing their sticks a little bit more with the, oh no, here we go again in game seven at home, feeling like it's slipping away again.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is all on the captain's shoulders, Ryan Getzlaff. He's been there a long time. He is still a great player. Perry has, you know, come down a little bit to reality. Yeah, Cogliano has been there for a while, but this is all on the captain's shoulders. We will know exactly how the Ducks are feeling based on his play early, because some of those losses you're talking about, there were some plays that Getzlaff was very much involved in that ended up resulting in goals against. So it is, if I'm the ownership of the Ducks, I'm not worried about our coach. You know, at this point, you point the guys in the right direction, do the best you can. Our goalie, Gibson, will probably figure it out. Their D is whatever. It's young, it's mobile, but it is on their captain. This is, for me, a litmus test for Getzlaff. Can he get his team over the top without other people helping him? It's all on Getzlaff. Might not be fair, but it's because it's happened number of times. He's been the captain. This is on Getzlaff. I'll be really interested to see how he wears this on Wednesday night, starting whatever, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, and I agree, because, listen, Draisaitl dominated last game. He was all world and completely dominant and dominated Getzlaff. And so people are wondering, well, does Randy Carlyle need to do something and maybe try and get Getzlaff out of that matchup or get him some breathing room? Or, you know what? If Ryan Getzlaff can't beat Leon Draisaitl head-to-head in a game seven, then the Ducks probably don't deserve to go on. He's an all-world type of player. I think you just got to let it roll and trust that Ryan Getzlaff is going to be able to get it done. But Draisaitl is lights out against this team, and so that's got to make them a little bit nervous.
Shogger, you ever watched Arrested Development?
I did, yeah.
Are you a never nude?
No, I'm not a never nude.
Okay, well, we found out Tobias Strudwick is. So
I'm never naked. The shower, never. I just, why? Why do you want to see everything jingling and jangling all over the place, especially when you go to bed?
But did you just say the shower?
No, I only in the shower. I am naked in the shower. But even if we're in an all men's club and we go into a hot tub, I'm wearing shorts.
Right. Well, I'm not going to object too much to that idea. I mean, I think you're fine. Yeah. Please do. I don't have an issue. But like under what circumstances, Jason, just so we clarify here, what circumstances do you think he should be nude that he's not coming true on?
Well, lots. He doesn't. The sleeping, number one, is very comfortable going completely raw there.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Kind of a personal thing, but okay.
Yeah, well,
sure.
He says he steps out of the shower and he won't walk across any part of his house to even get a towel. It's got to be have his clothes right there. Like there's a, you know, would never go to a nude beach. Like there's a whole list of things for him, right?
Never.
He's in the change room. Huh. You know what? When he wanted to get appendectomy surgery, which you have to, of course, go back, he begged to keep his boxer shorts on.
I did ask. I didn't beg. I just said, do you mind if I leave my boxers on? They said, Jason, I'm sorry. We have to take them off. Listen, I'm not ashamed. That's obvious. You guys have seen me. It's just
we haven't. You're a never nude. How could I have seen you? That's a bold-faced lie.
Well, you can use your x-rays. You know what I'm talking about.
Size six shoes. Figure it out.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. But, you know, it just for me, I just don't feel the need to be. It's uncomfortable. You know, but I got to shower with other men. Well, not as much as I used to, but I do it. I used to do it all the time. That was never a problem. But when we get out, it's time to put the clothes on.
I could just find it interesting that you're never nude, yet Fedor Tootin can serenade you in the shower, and that's good.
Yeah, but let's say, like, after a game, you're sitting around talking to the next guy. Why does he have to be buck naked with his jingle and jangling? Just sitting there. Can't you put a towel over, leave your shorts on? That always bothered me. I had a friend, one guy, he'd ride his bike naked. Ride the bike naked. What, like, why do I want to see that funk and junk all over the place?
Well, it's probably just because he was doing it to rattle you.
This is a little much for dinner time radio. Like I'm.
I just asked you a simple question, and you and Struds took it way offside. So anyway, you guys have a good one,
and
you two never nudes. We'll talk tomorrow.
Yeah, well, we can hang out together.
Ryan Rashog.